Hello and welcome to The Indoorsman, your podcast guide to the great indoors. I am Matt.
And I am the super smooth and sexy voiced Cliff.
Oh, Cliff. Oh, Cliff, you sound so different.
I know, right?
What happened? Did you get a puberty?
It might be this giant apparatus I have hanging off my desk that puts a microphone, a nice one, right in my mouth.
Thank you for saying hanging off your desk. That was appreciated. Yes, Cliff has a nice microphone now. Got a nice big mic.
And now I'm doubly poor.
But it's okay, because it means less work for me editing the show, so that's basically a win for everyone.
You say that, but when the buses go past on the O-Bahn, and they will, you'll be going through and muting that sound.
Yes, that's something. Move. Mm. Move houses.
Nope, I like my house. In fact, I've been here for 1 year and 1 day now, so I am drinking the champagne that I was given as a congratulations back then. So, yay.
You waited a while to celebrate, clearly.
I did. Champagne does not taste good, so I've had to mix it with orange juice to make it bearable.
Yeah, it's generally the way to go. I don't know why anyone likes champagne. Just because it's expensive doesn't mean it's good.
It's because it's French, but that doesn't mean it's good either.
But we're also here to celebrate being back for the podcast for another week on the totally inconsequential episode number of 34, maybe, I think. Mm-hmm. We forgot to celebrate the fact that we hit 30. Or anything after 21, really. So let's try and keep track of it for when we hit 50 and celebrate then.
Yeah, 50, I guess, is a thing. After 21, who really gives a shit? You're not really any more or less an adult than normal.
Exactly. By sitcom standards, we should have had a crisis of faith in episode 30 before we sort of got over it, but we kind of missed the mark on that one.
Oh boy, if only real life was like a sitcom.
Well, I get to practice that at the end of the year when I turn 30, so I still have to figure out what exactly my freakout's going to be.
There will be none, because no one actually freaks out about being 30.
I'll probably forget about my birthday, in all honesty. But, video games, it's a thing.
It is a thing
we talk about.
Yeah.
Would you like to talk about some video games, Cliff?
I've played some this week.
That's very impressive.
Like,
I'm very proud of you.
More than 3 this week, actually.
Well, shit, that's good, because I've got like 7. So let's start with yours.
Right, so I played just a lot of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. I played a lot last night, actually. And we did very, very well last night. We made it into the top, or the last 10 people alive in our team about 4 or 5 times in a row. And we actually won one. We ended up in this open kind of field, and it was a very small field. It was probably about a 50-meter across diameter circle that we're all in, and there was at that point only one person was left alive from our team, and there was two others left in the field, and we could see the two others because we had 3 pairs of dead eyes watching and one person actually alive, so we're all spectating watching, so we could tell them exactly where the enemies were. And the two enemies started shooting at each other, so as soon as they started shooting at each other, I piped up and said, okay, I'll watch the kill count. When it drops from 3 people alive to 2, you pop up and shoot that guy. And then, of course, it happened, and I called it out, and a guy popped up, shot the other guy, and we won. Yay!
Nice.
We're awesome.
So yeah, I considered getting Battlegrounds through the Steam sale, but it's not actually on sale at all.
Plus, you don't play multiplayer games.
I wanted to give it a try. I did watch some gameplay footage from the Polygon guys. They've been doing kind of a semi-regular stream of the show on YouTube. They call themselves the Awful Squad. I was watching an episode where they had, I think, 4 of them playing, and then one of the other Polygon staffers, Simone de Rochefort, was acting as, like, mom of the squad, so they could only do the things she said they could do.
Right,
so they'd
have
to ask permission to, like, go pick up items and stuff. And she was, like, choosing how they had to dress from the equipment they found and all this kind of stuff. It was pretty entertaining. And then apparently they made up their own game modes and they were playing that, but I haven't checked that one out yet.
Yeah, so when it comes to the collectibles you can get, the clothing you can wear, it's pretty... It's okay. All of my friends that play pretty much have some sort of camo gear already, including our friend Jared that got the game on Friday, played it for the first time and has camo pants. I keep getting bright white clothing, obviously not great for blending in. What I do have, though, is blue jeans and a red and white striped, like horizontal striped shirt. I am Waldo at this point.
Nice.
So
I like it.
I do have that going for me, but it does paint a large target over your head when you're red and white striped shirt. So
that's
fuck those
true.
Guys.
But you are the most fashionable, so...
I wouldn't say that. I'm the most nostalgia recognizable of the group.
Yeah, maybe I'll check it out. Like, I would like to give it a try. But when it's still at $30, I'm like, for something I'm going to just give a try, it's a bit much.
Green Man Gaming actually have it a lot on special, or if they don't have it on special, they send out coupons to people, so you can get it 25% off, that kind of stuff, which is pretty significant at that price. So
yeah, might be worth looking into. What else have you been playing besides PUBG?
Well, I played. As we know from last week's episode, you gifted me a couple of games.
I did.
I played a lot of Abzu, assuming that's pronounced correctly, over the week, and it's a very, very pretty game. It's not a particularly action-packed game, but it's very, very entertaining. You get to swim around and hang out with dolphins and whale sharks and a specific great white shark that keeps popping up.
Yeah, he's not so much a hangout buddy as a minor menace.
Yeah, he's just kind of always there and you're following him around, it seems. Or her, because the big great whites tend to be female. So it could be a her.
Shark rights.
Well, I guess, yeah, sure. I mean, giant shark is awesome, no matter what. But yeah, you kind of swim around. I believe I'm up to the last level, just based on the meta. Because when you go through levels, there's meditation spots along the way.
Yeah.
So you can hang out on top of this, like a shark, like a totem pole almost.
It's carved
into the bottom of the ocean. And you can then, I guess, project into the fish and other creatures around you. And so you can kind of watch them. And you can switch between different ones. So there's, based on the amount of them I've got left to unlock, I think I'm on the last level. But it's very nice. It's very, very pretty. The atmosphere is very good in that game.
Yeah, I know for the last stretch of the game, it's a lot more sort of continuous movement, so there aren't really sort of relaxation moments. So yeah, you could be on the home stretch at this point.
Yeah, but you get to a point where you start moving from old ruined temples into more technological type stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm very much in that at the moment. There's one bit where you are in a massive field of devices. I don't want to spoil it too much, but I'm pretty sure there has to be an achievement for clearing that field, surely. It would take a long time.
I never went back and did the achievements for Abzu after I finished it. I played it for review at the time, back at Survivor.com. There's sort of a lot of continuous movement. I think, if you're at that point, there's a bit more to go, but it's pretty sort of like go, go, go from there on.
Yeah.
What does suck, though, is the bit where you're out of water and have to walk on the ground. Fuck those bits.
I've done one of those bits so far. It didn't seem too bad.
Because it's not the very controls long. Are so skew-iff.
It's geared for swimming around, the controls, for sure.
You basically have to push backwards to go forwards and all this kind of stuff when you're on ground. I'd literally invert the controls every time I had to go up above ground.
You do get turned around a lot as well when you're swimming and you kind of flip on yourself. So you've got to be aware of that. There was one great moment with the massive blue whales where you're swimming with them. And then that one comes right up beside you out of nowhere. That was amazing.
The scale in it is pretty impressive, yeah. Yeah, there's whales in the ocean.
Yeah, and you can hang out and the larger fish and whales, you can actually kind of swim with. You go right up next to them real close and you can kind of, you grab onto them, but not really grabbing hard, but you kind of swim up and get into their slipstream and you can kind of swim with them and direct them by kind of just, pushing your hands on them and stuff like that. So that's kind of cool as well. It's very, very, very nice, very atmospheric. Just kind of explorative art game is how I'd describe it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's from one of the creators of Journey, so it's definitely in the same vein.
But from what I've seen of it, it reeks of Journey.
Yeah. Just that meditation mode really works nice as like a really chill screensaver as well.
With the game, they should have just released an actual screensaver for it.
Yeah.
Just to be that.
Remember custom screensavers? God.
Yeah, I had the Matrix one and then didn't have it. Why would you have anything else? Because the early 2000s, I was just that cool.
Didn't know you back then, but I can imagine.
And then you realize that with LCD monitors, like, you don't need that shit. And you just turn off your monitors. Done.
Yeah, pretty much. RIP screensavers. So Abzu and PUBG. You said three games?
Yeah, so a third game I played was actually one we've talked about before a little bit, but not specifically. It's kind of a spin-off game of one we talked about before. Remember when I talked about Party Hard 2?
Yes.
There is a Party Hard Tycoon game in alpha at the same time as Party Hard 2. And what? It is the same graphical style, and you are a party planner, basically, and you create Party Hard 2 style parties. Different locations, different equipment. You have to put, like, you choose the theme of, like, you choose a location, and it may or may not cost a little bit, or might be free, or cost a lot of money, with different capacities. And then you choose a theme, and then you deck out your party, and you play through a calendar where you can have a party every night if you want.
Nice.
Yeah.
I wonder if they'll use this as sort of a sort of low-key level editor for Party Hard 2. That would be pretty cool if you generate a party in this and then somehow have the option to sort of transfer it over to Party Hard 2 to play through.
Well, you can actually make your own Party Hard levels at the moment and have people play them on the Steam community, I believe. I thought that too as well. And then I played Party Hard Tycoon, and I don't think that there will be that functionality. But it doesn't hurt the game at all. You don't get the ability to place traps, for example. Although the equipment you place may effectively be the traps if you did export it. It'd be kind of cool, but it's not really that kind of thing. If you want to just make your own Party Hard levels, you just use the level editor that they've already got out. But it's quite fun. You can, every level you can choose, at least in the alpha, you can choose up to 3 personnel. And the personnel do different things. So you can have someone serving food. So you have beer kegs and tables, and they will go around and restock all the food and drink in the kegs and all that sort of stuff. And it costs you money every time they do it. You can have cops that will, if your theme is, let's say, a punk theme, you can have a cop there that will actually take out the riffraff if they start start fighting with people. And you can have people that will call people and bring them to the party. And you can have people that will dance and increase the number of people that like your party. They'll kind of like kick things off, like a catalyst for getting the party going. So you can kind of choose how you want the party to go. You can choose the entry price as well, so you can make it super cheap or super expensive. You just kind of have to go on from there. And when you have a location decked out with equipment, it stays there as well. So you can keep using the same location with the equipment you've already purchased and purchase more and more as you go along. But if you move to another location, you have to purchase all new equipment for it.
Right. Okay.
Yep. So it's, you have to,
starting from scratch kind of thing.
Yeah. So as you expand and have different locations with different capacities, you have to reinvest the equipment. You can sell the equipment you've got at the other places, but you don't get as much as you spend for it. Of course, with every game like that, you never get full price for stuff you refund or sell. So it's kind of fun. I enjoyed it. I actually kind of want to play it some more. I look forward to both that and Party Hard coming out, or Party Hard 2 coming out to play more of.
Nice. Well, yeah, I bought a couple games from the Steam sale, including Party Hard 1, and am yet to play any of them. So that's pretty standard Steam fare, really. Just buy and forget.
Pretty much, yeah.
I will get back to it eventually. Honestly, I spent more on buying games for other people than I did for myself this year.
It's true.
I have an ongoing feud with a friend of the show, Pete.
Who
we aggressively buy games for each other every Steam sale, usually with some sort of offensive but loving tag attached to it.
The gifting with the message you get to send is one of the best bits about buying a game for another person.
Yeah. I think the last load of games I sent through for this Steam sale had a message along the lines of "choke on these games and die." So
Everything whenever I buy a game for my friend Jared, it always, the sign off was always "kablam."
Kablam is one of the better ones.
Yeah, mostly because Jared is known as a we joked that he's basically like a paramilitant, so kablam obviously fits.
Nice. I bought Party Hard, Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines, which I've heard good things about. It's an RPG about vampires based in the Half-Life 2 engine.
I've heard the same things. It looks like Diablo kind of game, is that right? It's like an isometric.
No, it's like it's in the Half-Life 2 engine, so it's all sort of first person.
The engine doesn't mean that it's not going to be isometric, but yeah. I thought there was a
There's probably another Vampire Masquerade game.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there was a last traditional version, style. Unless I'm thinking about something completely different. But yeah.
Yeah, so that and Paradigm, which is kind of a point-and-click adventure with really creepy graphics that I actually heard the developer talk about at PAX last year. So when I realized it was on Steam, I grabbed it for like $5, I think.
Sweet.
Yeah. As far as actual games I've been playing, though, oh boy, so many. I kept playing Ever Oasis, which I mentioned last week. It kind of got better, but it's very basic. It's kind of roaming, there's a little bit of town management and, you know, dungeon crawling and all this kind of stuff. But it's very surface level because I think it's geared more to little kids, kind of an introduction to Monster Hunter type gameplay kind of thing.
It is a pretend game before you play real games.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it's nice enough and I'll probably finish it eventually, but it's not super exciting after you get into the rhythm of it is the problem. Like, there's just not much else there. Other than just grinding over and over and over again. Which, if you're a kid and have an infinite attention span, sure, great. But not so much for me. I think I mentioned last week I finished Breath of the Wild.
Mm-hmm.
Finally. So I've picked up a couple of games on Switch to replace it. Shantae Half-Genie Hero, which is kind of a platformer where you play as a magic half-genie girl. She can, like, transform into animals and stuff, so kind of interesting. Really nice, like, cartoony graphic style. Very clean looking on the Switch.
Can you wish for people to fall in love with you and or wish people back from the dead?
No. She's only half genie, though.
Right. So we're going on the same rules as Aladdin here, then.
Pretty much.
Gotcha.
Also, she probably dies a lot easier. It's kind of an old platformer that's been brought back through Kickstarters and stuff, so has a bit of that difficulty curve. Not as bad as stuff like Wonder Boy, but still pretty tough. So that's kind of cool. I also picked up Oceanhorn, which is originally a mobile game that got like a console port and like a HD upscale.
Right.
It's kind of like isometric-y, top-down, sort of traditional Zelda looking a little bit. And it's kind of aping the Wind Waker to an extent because you're a kid with a sword and a shield and you have a boat and go between islands. But I picked it up on iOS originally when it came out, and just the touch controls were no good. So It's nice to be playing it with actual controller controls. So yeah, I'm working my way through that. It's kind of cool, but I don't think it's very long, because I've already gotten one of the three necessary MacGuffins for the end game, and I've only been playing it for like a week.
Ah, right.
So yeah, it's kind of mobile game length, I guess. But I have seen that they're working on Oceanhorn 2, which looks like it'll be taking a big graphical uptick. So I look forward to that. I think they're cross-developing for platform and mobile at that point, so...
Alright, cool. So hopefully it, yeah, like, fully expands into a big, proper game.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, this first game is kind of, sort of chibi, deformed kind of graphics. Like, think how the sort of mobile, or not mobile, like the handheld Zeldas look. Versus, like, Skyward Sword. It's that kind of change in graphical style and quality.
Alright, cool.
So yeah, I look forward to that. I think they're still working on it, so it's not got an end date or anything.
Cool. Just before we go on, on the topic of mobile games, the Futurama mobile game, Worlds of Tomorrow. I haven't played it. I forgot to play it. I want to play it. I actually cranked it up as we were talking before we started recording, and the opening cutscene is basically an episode. It just looks like another episode of Futurama, so I'm going to play the shit out of that, because Futurama is possibly one of the best animated shows ever made.
Possibly. Yeah. Yeah, so kind of been switching to that stuff on the Switch, but also out this week was the Crash Bandicoot remaster.
Ooh, how is it? I think, from what I've seen, people seem to be very happy with the graphical part of it.
Yeah, the visuals, it's... the kind of the nostalgic view of the graphics brought to life. There's just a lot of quality uptick, but they've kept all the personality of the original characters. Like, Crash was one of the very, very, very early PlayStation 1 games.
Yes,
and
it was.
From reading a bit about how they developed that game, they basically pumped it a lot out of it that no one thought was possible at the time, because partly because they didn't know what they were doing, so they were just making it up as they went along. I'm assuming you've played at least some Crash Bandicoot in your lifetime.
Way back when. Yes. Also, after just a quick side digression here, I just got a thing on my phone saying from Futurama, saying, "Come back, just a friendly reminder from Morbo," and then in all caps, "Come back and play or be destroyed." Multiple exclamation points.
Very nice.
So I'm going to be playing a lot of that, I think. Anyway, continue. Yeah, I played a bunch of Crash Bandicoot in the day.
Yeah, so you had sort of the winding tunnel sort of curving back and forth, fighting enemies, jumping over cliffs, all that kind of stuff.
Collecting apples from memory? It was crates for apples, fruit? Wasn't it?
Wumpa fruit.
Sure, I mean, they're apples.
God, Cliff. But yeah, so the reason that the levels were all sort of curvy tunnels was because there was only a finite number of polygons they could render on screen with the PlayStation 1. And basically, what they did to make it look as good as it did at the time was they had very high polygon model for Crash. I think he was like 500 polygons out of 1,000 they could do or something like that. So they had to budget everything else, which is why there's never more than like two enemies on screen at a time. But basically, there's all these kind of details coming in from the sides of the level, you know, trees and stuff like that, which would partially obscure what's ahead. So anytime something wasn't actually visible to the camera, it wasn't rendered. So if there was a tree covering up a thing, it would stay blocking the way until you sort of walked past it. And as soon as it went past the point of view, the crates that would have been behind it start rendering. So it was all this kind of like in the moment rendering that they were doing to not have to show everything or like generate everything in the background and therefore make everything look better as a result.
Yeah, so, which is a trick that's been around for eternity when it comes to 3D gaming.
But they were one of the first ones to actually do it. So
yeah, so it's a trick that is still used now. Even though we have so much more computing power, we also have so much more to render in-game. So it's still the same thing. You only render what is actually visible if you can get away with it.
Yeah, which is and why, I mean, it's the reason why you had Crash Bandicoot on the PS1 earlier versus Final Fantasy VII early on in the PS era, where everyone was just made out of bricks because that was the best they could do.
Pretty much, yeah. Even though the only things they were rendering were the 20 polygons that were Cloud and Barret and Tifa.
Red 13 would have been a nightmare. But yeah, so based on that, like, it already looked good on the PS1, so this re-render they've done where it's like, it's 1080p, 60 frames a second, so it's smooth as butter and looks amazing. The soundtrack's been re-recorded, but everything feels the same way. All the sound effects are just like perfect nostalgia. The levels, they haven't changed anything about the content, so it's still PS1 era hard, which is very frustrating, but is true to the experience. Like, Crash 1...
You have played it then, yeah?
I have, yeah.
Right, because there was not a lot to that game.
No, Crash 1 was pretty simple. I mean, they had different level types. You had your sort of roaming levels, you had your sort of 2D, sort of left to right levels. Running away from an object or being on an animal and running toward, like, through the level.
Yeah, because my memories of that game are pretty much entirely running at the camera.
Yeah.
Jumping over holes in the ground, Indiana Jones style.
While it was being developed, the team behind it, Naughty Dog, they'd nicknamed it Sonic's Ass the Game. Because they basically built a Sonic game, but going sort of like from camera to the distance. So it's really good. It's all three games in there at once, which is good, because I don't think I ever played Crash 3, except for a demo we had as kids.
I can't actually remember if I played them all. They all just into one, which is what happens when you haven't played a game in 15, 20 years.
Yeah. So it's really good. I really like it. It's so frustrating because Crash 1 especially, it was like pixel perfect platforming you had to be doing, otherwise you would fuck up. And there's no health bars. It's just you're dead. You lose a life. You lose a life. You lose a life.
It was pretty much a rhythm game.
Kind of, yeah.
Before rhythm games came out, you had to memorize the level to know what was coming out, because you would die at a spot, memorize that was a thing, and then go back, you reload. And then you memorize the level. It's a rhythm game. You jump here, you wait, you know, X number of beats, jump there, jump there. It was a rhythm game before we had Rock Band or Guitar Hero.
And stuff like the boulder chase levels were the worst for that kind of stuff, because you're running towards the camera, you can't see where you're going.
Oh, yeah, you have no fucking
You will
point.
Die for like unfair level design. Because so it was designed to build, make you just replay to sort of extend the life of the game, because that's just what games were like at that point.
It was a like a version of the, was it the hardest game ever, which is the Mario game, where you have to memorize exactly what happens, because you would die 50 times a level because it changes it up. It was like that, but a much watered down version. The hardest game ever would come after that, based on shit like Crash Bandicoot and other stuff, where they would just throw something out of the blue at you, and you did it once and you thought, oh shit, next time I won't jump, or next time I will jump. And that was where it came from.
Yeah, like literally the only change they've made with the game, because they didn't even fold in the lost levels from Crash 1 that never sort of made it to the final game, is once you beat the first boss in each game, you can choose to toggle between Crash or his sister Coco. Nothing changes in the gameplay, just sort of the visuals, but it's a nice little touch. They've kind of built it into the game so that, you know, after you beat the first boss in Crash 1, for instance, Papu Papu, the big Polynesian dude who you just jump on his head.
I was going to say, I have memories of the mask.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's like the easiest boss battle ever. Basically, he has his big stick, he hits the ground and spins around. I think it came back to me as like a hindbrain memory, but you can basically just jump up on the chair that he was sitting on at the start of the level and he can't hit you at all. So I'd basically just bop him on the head, jump on there, wait for him to sort of get to his vulnerable state again and jump on his head again. Easiest boss ever.
That's the one of the great things about video games, is you can circumvent all this effort by programmers and developers to make you do things. And there's someone who will always find a way to circumvent all of that and get the easy way out.
And I love that they kept it in the game. Shit.
Yeah, and you can remember that shit from back in the 90s, like the early 90s, late 80s even. And you can just remember the dumb shit you did. Like, I remember playing Mario 3 on a Nintendo and remembering exactly how to get all of the whistles in that game. And I just remember that shit. And, yeah, it's crazy. The brain. Yeah, I don't remember actual important things. Like, I can't tell you the details of my mortgage or anything like that. But if you ask me to load up Super Mario 3 and tell me to get a whistle, or tell me to get to the last level, I will get you to the last level within half an hour.
Nice.
Allowing 20 minutes for, oh yeah, shit, I'm playing Mario again. I have two buttons to press.
Yeah, slight adjustment. Yeah. But yeah, so after you beat the first boss in each game, such as the incredibly easy Papu Papu, basically a little time warp platform a la Crash 3 Warped appears, and Coco just pops out of it, and you can choose to switch to her at any point. So it's this kind of cute touch, because Crash 3's whole thing was it was all about time travel, so you'd be going to different eras and stuff so they could have more themed levels. And they've kind of sort of tied that back into the timeline from the previous games so that you can warp back into the previous games and play as Coco. So it's a nothing change, but it's something nice that's just included there to have a bit more fun with it. So yeah, I will plug away at that for forever, because I'm just not good at those kind of old school games anymore. But I will do my darndest.
It's such a weird thing that you only had two buttons back in the day. In PlayStation, you had four buttons, but not every game actually used all the buttons.
Oh, yeah.
And now we have an entire keyboard we need to keep up, because there's so much you can do in a game. And going back to two buttons is impossibly hard. It was insane. It's easy to forget how unforgiving old games were, and how your attention span was just, I can play Super Mario for 8 hours a day. Or in my case, I played Mickey Mouse Castle of Illusion, because that shit was awesome. And I remember staying home one day when I wasn't well from school, in primary school, and just playing that and actually completing the game at home. Mum went to work, my brother went to school, I stayed at home all day. When I felt better, I went to the lounge room, cranked out the Master System 2, got me some Mickey Mouse, and finished that game. And yeah, it's, and if I go and play it now, I just get immediately annoyed by how difficult it is, and just move to something else, which is more difficult when you consider the comparison, because you have to do so much more in a small amount of time. But just getting the jumps perfect every time, you forget the 10 hours you played for like half an hour of great gameplay.
Yeah, they remade that in a HD version recently. Did you end up picking it up?
Was it actually Castle of Illusion?
They did Castle of Illusion, and they also did the DuckTales game, I think.
I remember the DuckTales game. I don't remember Castle of Illusion. Let me have a look at this, because I feel like I should know this. Wait. How the fuck have I not played this game?
This was like 4 years ago, dude.
How the hell have I not played this? This is one of my best ever, my most cherished childhood memories is Castle of Illusion. How have I not got... All right, I'm getting paid on Friday. I'm buying this game.
Yep. I would check Steam. It's probably in the sale.
It's actually on special now. It's only a little under $5 US. Nice. I'm going to have to get this because, yeah, that game... the chocolate level. Like, I remember that game. That's how much it made an impact on me, but I remember some of these things. I'll investigate. Next week, we'll talk about this.
Yeah. But, yeah, just finishing up on Crash, the best part of the game was I was sitting there playing it yesterday morning. My sister sort of wandered through, didn't even look at the TV, and just sort of heard some of the sound effects and went, "Is that Crash Bandicoot?" And then sat down and tried playing it for a while. Because we used to play it together as kids. That and Crash Team Racing, which was the closest thing to Mario Kart we had as PlayStation kids. She's not good at it, but she was having a good time. So it was nice. It's been ages since I've played a video game with my sister, so I enjoyed that. The one other game I have been playing this week is one that was sent over to us by the publisher, the good folks at Five Star Games. I've been playing Valkyria Revolution.
Ooh, just before we get to that, I want to derail for just 1 second, talking about nostalgia and old games with sound effects and all that sort of shit. So you gifted me Abe's Odyssey last week.
I did.
It's Oddworld New and Tasty is effectively Abe's Odyssey.
Because it's Odyssey and Exodus.
Yeah. I think. Yeah, I could not play more than about 5 minutes of that game. Do you want to know why?
Tell me.
Because the voice of Abe, despite being by the same actor, is not the fucking voice of Abe.
Oh, he didn't rematch it?
It is not. The inflections, everything, it's completely off. Now, I'm not going to give up, because immediately I searched to try and find someone that had actually edited or modded the game to include the classic sound effects, and people have been doing it. So nice. It might take some work. I'm going to try. I've downloaded of all things, a RAR file of all the sound effects, the voice effects of the original game, because it's not the same. When Abe doesn't whistle or fart the same, no game. It's just not the same.
You can't get the fart wrong.
Yeah, it's not the same. And even the opening intro where you load up the menu and there's played Abe's Odyssey, and Abe pops out of the middle of it and says, "Hello." And it's just not the same in the new one at all. That's a bad impression, by the way, of me doing Abe. But it's not the same.
I mean, it had some tones of it, yeah. Yeah, but you can't get the fart wrong. Come on, it's the fart.
I know. And the laugh, when he farts, he laughs. And the laugh is wrong as well. And it kills me. It'd be great if I hadn't played the original Abe game, but because I have, and I love it. Yeah, it's...
I think when they originally made Abe's Odyssey HD, it came out on the PS3, maybe? I picked that up because I loved those games. I only got halfway through the factory levels before I got frustrated. I think I lost one of the workers. I was just like, ugh, fuck. I forgot how hard it was.
Yeah, there are a lot of workers you need to save, and in order to get the good ending, you need to save them all.
Yeah, you had to get like perfect save rate. Mm. And I didn't, and I was just like, ugh, I don't want to replay it. And then I put it down and never picked it up again.
Yeah. Anyway, so on to this other game.
Yeah, so I've been playing a bit of Valkyria Revolution. It's kind of a spin-off of the Valkyria Chronicles games, which are sort of a cult indie darling game from way back when. Recently got remastered on PC and PS4 earlier this year. Basically sort of a war game set in an alternate Europe, where it's like mech suits and swords and more anime stuff. But it had this really unique sort of sketchbooky art style. And it's very sort of strategy heavy, sort of maintaining the battlefield, all this kind of stuff. And it's well loved. So Valkyria Revolution is set in a different war going on the other side of Europa, their version of Europe, and is about sort of a small nation fighting for independence from this kind of encroaching empire, which I think is meant to kind of represent the Nazis. They've got a very sort of black and red aesthetic, and right. They're kind of oppressive and obviously evil because they're the bad guys.
Now, as Revolution, I understand it, you're about to cliff it up, aren't you?
I might be cliffing a little bit.
Yeah.
So, Revolution sort of does away with a lot of the strategy stuff and is more of an action RPG. So it's roaming across the battlefield, kind of Dynasty Warriors style, with hints of kind of the strategy, and that you can kind of freeze frame the battlefield to pull off like magic moves and stuff like this. The art style has kind of done away with the sort of sketchbooky thing. It's got hints of it, but not a lot. It's more kind of in line with your average anime game these days. The combat's pretty good. It's kind of nice roaming around the battlefield.
The inflection there. Do you want to go on about that?
I do. So they've kind of tried to make it feel turn-based, even though it's not. How they achieve that is your sort of basic strikes with your giant magic-powered sword have a recharge timer, where you sort of do your attack and then you have to wait a couple seconds before it recharges and you can strike again. Mm-hmm. The enemies are subject to the same thing. So it makes it feel turn-based, but basically it just means that it's taking longer. So you hit a couple times, you have to wait until a giant ready prompt pops up over the center of the screen, which stays there until you attack again. So mm-hmm. it's kind of cluttering up the screen at the same time. But it's not that fun. Like, I get having like cooldown on attacks, that's fine, but it just feels too slow. It
right.
isn't a good slow. And there's so much story. There's so much story.
Now, how much was it before you actually got to play? Or how much in the first hour did you actually get to play?
So it was at least 15 minutes before I actually got to play the game at all. Just sitting through story scenes. I played it originally up till basically the first boss, a giant sort of mechanized camel/dragon, where you had to sort of attack its feet to make its head dip down and then smash its head a bunch. Finished that. Went through the next sort of cutscene and said, okay, that was sort of the end of the prologue chapter. The game will have saved. And I switched it off to do something else. When I came back, there was no save data. So I had to play the entire first 45 minutes hour again. This time I tried to skip through the dialogue to sort of speed up the cutscenes. You can't. You either watch the entire thing or you skip it completely. So I skipped it completely. And that 45 minutes to an hour of initial gameplay turned out to be more like 5 minutes of gameplay in between 40 to 55 minutes of cutscenes. And not great cutscenes.
Yeah.
It's very anime stuff. You've got a cast of a bunch of characters, and every single one of them has to have something to say in every situation before you can move on, and most of it is just nothing dialogue. You've got all the sort of the standbys, the stoic girl, like the ditzy genius, the hardened older soldier, the pervy guy, the foreign one, and then your actual protagonist, who's a blank slate with, as far as I've played, no character.
Now, not knowing, and admittedly I know a bit about this game anyway, but not knowing anything about this game, you've literally described every single Japanese RPG-ish game ever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which
was great for a certain period of time. We have moved on from this now. We have built on top of and made better this formula and really honed it with other games.
I mean, the combat's enjoyable enough, but the amount of story stuff to get through in between... I mean, there's kind of an interesting framing device in that basically the setting of the game is... It's the history of the story. There's the five traitors who are buried in their homeland despite being traitors. So the framing device is a student and teacher sort of sitting at these five traders' grave sites talking about all these battles that happened 100 years ago. So you're sort of looking back on the true history of the battles rather than what's put in the history books, which kind of correlates to how you're going back to these battles and sort of playing them out. In between, you can sort of look in the student's textbooks to basically see like the recorded version of history versus what you've actually just played through. So that's cool. But every time you finish a story event, it pulls you back to this field that they're sitting in, and you have to re-prompt the teacher to continue the story. But not just between missions. I finished that first mission, and it went back to them, and I was like, okay, cool, I'll start the next mission. Then went into the past, basically, watched through a 5-minute cutscene, and then it booted me back to the field again. Nothing changed. There was nothing new in the glossary. I hadn't done any actual combat. I just got sent back there to basically immediately prompt the teacher to continue again. It was totally pointless. And there are so many load screens. So many. Like, middle of cutscenes, end of cutscenes, and they're all so long. it's not a graphically intense game. It's got a nice look to it, but it's not the kind of hardcore work that would require that much in between rendering if it was being handled well in the background.
Yeah, I mean, admittedly, it's a completely different type of game, but in a world where we can play GTA 5 without load scenes, different to when you go indoors or when you actually load up a specific set play, but when you can browse a world of hundreds of square kilometers without a load screen, and we're still having to deal with massive load screens, holy shit. There has to be a better way, right?
Yeah. I mean, the cutscenes, yeah, they're bouncing back and forth a lot when they're talking constantly, but I mean, it makes me think of games like Half-Life 2 again, where you'd have sort of stuff happening out around Gordon Freeman, and then on a screen there'd be a character talking. And how that was actually working was that there was a boxed off section far away on the map that was that character model, and then just sort of a camera that was relaying it to where you were.
Mm-hmm.
You've got these cutscenes in Valkyria where, yeah, you'll be switching between different groups, but every time it sort of stops, loads, moves to the other scene, finishes that, stops, loads, goes back to the original. It's just very delayed and kind of plodding, which makes it harder to enjoy it when you're then still having to wait 40 minutes till the next time you get to do anything.
It seems like it's just a very old style game.
Yeah.
Working with older style dev techniques.
Yeah, I think if you're a fan of the Valkyria universe and you've played the, I think it's three other games that have been put out from Chronicles' side, it's good because it's more of the storyline. It's exploring a different area of this universe and expanding all the mythology. If you're coming into the series fresh, I'd probably recommend going for the Chronicles remaster instead. Because it's not the best introduction to the series. You're not going to play this, love it, and move back to the other games. You're better to start from the gold and sort of see if you want to stick through the silver.
Can you make it through the not as good stuff afterwards?
Yeah, I mean, it's a 20-hour campaign from what I'm reading. I don't know that I'll get through it. I might give it another try, just to be fair, because I do like to give games time to sort of roll into their own, but I don't know.
Just to go back
it's
to
it's good, but it's not great.
A reference that we used before, you were going to love the shit out of The Matrix, and then you're going to watch The Matrix 2, and you're going to go, cool, and then you're going to watch Matrix 3 and go, what now? Can we go back to The Matrix 2 maybe and see if we can get another 3? Or then just go back to Matrix 1 and go, can we just stop? I actually quite like The Matrix 2. It's very good. It sets up a great movie that just does not deliver in 3.
Yeah. So this is kind of The Matrix 3, but without the sort of technical prowess of rendering like dozens and dozens of Agent Smiths.
So yeah. Exactly. You have to load every time you change the shot, the camera shot, to incorporate the new Smiths you have to load in that shot.
Yeah. So that fight, that's though, been with my experience Smiths with
was pretty fucking great, though.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I will maybe go back to that, see how we go. In the meantime, I might switch back to playing Persona 5 as one of the good anime games that I've really enjoyed recently.
Still playing Persona 5?
Still playing Persona 5. I'm in October. I think the game ends in December. I'm on the home stretch. And I love it, but the more I play, the less I have left to play, which makes me sad. That's what an anime game should do to your brain, not this. Otherwise, it's news, video game news, there's some news. There has been some news. For something a bit local, firstly, the new TV show from some of the staff members who left Good Game kicked off this week just passed.
Hooray! I never watched Good
Screenplay.
Game,
I used to watch it pretty heavily. I was a little bummed when they retired the main show and continued only as the kid show, which actually even lost the Good Game branding.
Like, one of my best mates actually got to see the final show. He went to it live and saw the final show.
Oh, the live show, nice.
Yeah, he said it was great. He also commented on the attractiveness of Hex, but yeah, that's a given.
Hex and Nick, the guy who used to do Good Game Pocket, the online sort of daily show, have moved over to Channel 7 and are doing kind of a combination of Good Game and Good Game Pocket. They've got the main show screenplay, which airs on Thursday nights at 10 p.m. on 7mate.
For those that actually watch television that's aired over the radio waves, if you are still that kind of caveman that does it.
Yeah, but they also have a daily content on their YouTube channel. It's so, like, themed. They have a daily news thing and then themed content. So Monday will be sort of a rundown of the games coming out that week. Then they'll do like a Let's Play and a Q&A and Twitch stream and something else. So it's like something happening each day, which is kind of cool to watch. I watched the live show. Oh boy, the move to commercial TV, it's done a number on the show, I think.
It has, let's say, commercialized that show?
Yeah, there's some commercials going on. I'd forgotten how many commercials are in a commercial break.
Probably about 8 minutes worth of commercials. Total over a half an hour show, so you're only watching 22 minutes. Maybe, tops.
They're sort of going for a broader audience, being on Mate. So it's a bit, I wouldn't say dumbed down, but it's sort of
the Aussiest fucking name for a channel ever, 7mate.
They do make fun of that at the start of the first episode.
Do they really? That's awesome.
Yeah, they had sort of a scene they did where they're talking to like a 7mate producer, basically. And he's like, oh, yeah, like, we've signed you guys on to 7mate. Sorry, mate.
That's pretty funny. I mean, if you're not Australian, you wouldn't, I guess, get that. It wouldn't be as funny to you, but yeah, it's pretty funny.
This is the blokiest channel. Yeah. But yeah, and then he's sort of running off. He's like, oh, but on this channel, we do a lot of, like, sports. I'm like, oh, yeah, we can do sports. And then cuts them, like, dressed up in, like, gridiron stuff and footage of Madden.
Let's also say that Channel 7 does sport very badly as well.
And it's like, oh, but we also do, like, a lot of racing. So they cut to, like, Gran Turismo or something. It's like, oh, a lot of, like, action flicks. So they cut to, I don't know, some shooter or something. And then they're like, all right, cool. Yeah, let's go do our show. It starts in 2 minutes. I'm like, shit, we've got to go get ready.
You know what they should have cut to with that? They should have cut to Doom.
It's pretty doomy. But yeah, so like for the first episode, some of the content was repeated from the stuff they'd been releasing early on the YouTube channel. So I'm hoping that's not a continuing trend, because if it's just like repeated content, like it's not worth watching the live show.
I might actually watch it then if it's just repeated, because I don't care about the TV side, but if it's on YouTube, I might actually watch it.
Yeah, the YouTube content seemed more extended, so that's why I'm thinking they've just done this one-off for the first episode to kind of firstly introduce people on the YouTube side and then reuse it to get ready for the new show.
Yeah. Plus, even though they've had the Good Game backing, it'll take a while for it to actually kind of find its feet and work out what they're actually doing with it.
They seem to be doing like a good chunk of esports coverage, which is good if you're interested in that kind of thing, because Good Game never really did it. But I don't really care about that. So, I mean, it's good to have it there for the people who care, bring in that side of the audience, which honestly, looking at 7mate, you're probably going to have a decent amount of overlap for people who care about esports. But not so much for me. Yeah, I mean, it seems good. They're going to be, like, 7 are allowing them to repost everything to YouTube after the episodes air. So that might be a good way to view it.
I would hope that that was something they actually asked for specifically. Because if they weren't allowed to do it, it just means that they don't have any idea of who their audience is.
Yeah, I think there's definitely going to be some drop-off because it is a different form for the show. Yeah. But yeah, like letting it stream online on top of being on the whatever the Channel 7 watchback stuff is definitely a good choice. I will keep giving it a try because first episode, obviously, not necessarily found their footing. I'll definitely watch the online content because that seems a bit more relaxed and in the vein of Good Game. But I don't know if I'll stick with the TV stuff. Watching TV is really weird. Also, really funny that every time they came back from an ad break, it was like, this show is brought to you by Screenplay, the new gaming experience on 7mate. Now returning to Screenplay. So it's good to see that they're sponsoring themselves.
It reminds me of the super weird Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will return. And you see the S.H.I.E.L.D.
in a moment.
And then you get the 2 minutes after that. It's almost like the last 2 minutes of every episode is a credit scene. It's such a weird thing.
Screenplay, I'll keep giving it a try. Definitely follow the online content, but the live show might be a miss for me. At least watching it on YouTube, I can skip over the bits I don't care about.
And the screenplay is brought to you by Screenplay.
Yeah, that also I could go without. In other gaming news, Nintendo surprised no one by announcing the SNES Mini this week.
Oh, yes, which this thing.
Is sort of the next step up from the NES Mini. They've firstly promised better production cycles compared to the constant shortages of NES Minis, but they will only be producing it between the release date in, I think, September and the end of the year. After that, they will not make any more.
Yeah, so they've said, oh, yeah, we're going to try and get more to try and, you know, help people that couldn't get them in the initial round. But in reality, we're only going to make a certain number at a certain time, so you won't be able to get them, even if you want them. They've basically just said the same. They're going to try and fix that thing that they're going to do, and then just doing the exact same thing again, with slightly more numbers.
So yeah, I mean, it's the same model as the NES Mini. It's, in this case, 21 included games. You can't plug in original cartridges, which still seems like a really missed opportunity.
It does seem like a massive missed opportunity.
But it'll have the controllers, and yeah, the 21 games, including Star Fox 2, which was never released because it eventually became Lilith Wars on the 64.
And you know how you can play the game? You have to play through the first thing of the first game in order to unlock the second game.
Some of the games on the lineup look pretty good. What have we got? Contra 3, Donkey Kong Country, yes. Final Fantasy 6, yes. F-Zero, never played it, but I hear it's good. It's Kirby good, Superstar, yeah. Yes.
Kirby's fucking great, yes.
Yep. Zelda Link to the Past, yes.
Fuck yes.
Mega Man X, mm-hmm.
Sure, why not?
Secret of Mana?
Yeah.
Star Fox and Star Fox 2, already spoken about those. Super Ghouls and Ghosts, I'm indifferent. Super Mario Kart, yes.
I mean, if you didn't have that on there, like, why would you even bring this out?
Exactly. Impressively, Super Mario RPG Legend of the Seven Stars. Good gracious, yes. That was the Square Enix produced one. Or, sorry, Squaresoft at the time. Super Mario World and Super Mario World 2. Yoshi's Island. Can't really not have those, can you?
Interestingly, on that, what is a glaring omission is there no Super Mario All-Stars on there?
There is not.
And that seems like a massive... Like, why would you not put that on there?
Super Metroid, though, big win. Like, would be happy to play that. Then there's a sort of five games that are different between the Western and Japanese versions. So for the Western audience, we get Earthbound, which, fantastic. Mm. Like, that game didn't get a proper release except for the Wii U version that happened last year, or maybe a couple years ago. Kirby's Dream Course, which I don't remember that one. I think that was like a weird spin-off title. Street Fighter 2 Turbo Hyper Fighting, which is one of the many versions of Street Fighter 2.
It sounds like that's probably the best version because it has the most in it, because it has the most things in the name.
Possibly. Also, Super Castlevania 4 and Super Punch-Out, which both pretty good choices.
Mm.
By comparison, Japan gets Fire Emblem Mystery of the Emblem, which I don't think we've ever had. Legend of the Mystical Ninja, Panel de Pon, which I have no idea what that is, Super Soccer, and Super Street Fighter 2 The New Challengers, which is a different version of Street Fighter that they're getting for some reason.
It's probably a Japanese regional version of the one that the West gets,
yeah, I would think. It did come out originally in Europe back in 94, but I don't know if we would have gotten it.
I want to talk about one other glaring omission on that console as well.
I think I can guess what it is, but please.
Why is there no Final Fantasy VI on there?
There is. I said Final Fantasy VI.
You didn't say Final Fantasy VI. You said Secret of Mana.
I said Final Fantasy VI. It was the second game on the list.
Is there
Contra 3, Donkey Kong Country, Final Fantasy VI.
Oh, that's good then. Fine. I'm good then. I heard actually that there was no Final Fantasy VI on that at all. And I thought, what the fuck?
Well, it's Final Fantasy III because it's going by the American name, but it is on there.
Oh, that's
what the actual glaring omission is fucking Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, yeah, that's a
fair problem. The fuck is Chrono Trigger?
Yeah.
Like, you can take out literally any one of these games and replace it with Chrono Trigger and I would be fine with it.
Yeah. It's, the whole reaction I have to the release of this is, it's very cool and all. Am I going to pay $120 for it? Fuck no. Purely because of all the people, like, if you actually think about it, of all the people that bought the NES, the mini NES, of the people, like, do you expect that any more than 1% of those people actually played for more than a few hours?
Yeah, that's the thing. And I mean, the Super NES I'm more excited about because the games are at a higher level, so there's more content there overall. And yes, at $120, it's expensive, but that's like $5.50 per game. But you know what? That's worthless when there's no fucking Chrono Trigger.
I don't know. It's a very cool concept, but it's not worth the amount of money that it costs. Yeah. There are a lot of better ways to spend $100. I mean, let's go for $100. Let's go see Spider-Man next week, and then get royally fucked up afterwards. That seems like a way better.
Oh yeah, let's do that.
That seems like a way better way to spend $100 than on a SNES Mini, when I've got a Raspberry Pi attached to my TV in the lounge room that already has Chrono Trigger loaded on it.
Yeah, you know what we can do? We can watch Spider-Man, get fucked up, and then, hey, play fucking Chrono Trigger.
Yeah. Right? I don't know. It's a cool concept. They Nintendo, I'm not saying that they're dumb. They're incredibly smart. They are pandering to nostalgia in the best way ever. And getting easy money from the same guys that can't seem to release Final Fantasy VII. Squeenix, I'm talking about here.
Oh, dear. The one other improvement that they have confirmed they'll be making, which I don't understand how they didn't do this in the first place, is that the length of the controller cords will be longer.
And now you get two as well, not just one.
Yeah.
Why would you ever release it with one?
I guess, yeah, you've got more two-player games with SNES, so that makes sense. But the NES Mini's controller cords were only sort of 3 feet, so just shy of a meter.
Which is great if you were 7 years old and sitting in front of your TV, your massive 34-centimeter CRT, like shitty old-school tube TV.
If you were working on an old CRT TV, it'd be fine. But when the average TV is, 42 inches or bigger at this point? That's way too close, even for a NES game where there's no graphical fidelity to worry about.
I'm struggling on my 22-inch or 24-inch computer monitors, and I'm only sitting 30 centimeters away from them. I want bigger right now. And yeah, like at my 40-inch TV that's now in my bedroom, looks tiny in my lounge room. I had to get a 60-inch TV for it to look normal size. Look, I had to get that TV, damn it. It wasn't... Look, I didn't eat very well after that, but I had to buy that TV.
Yeah. The SNES Mini will upgrade to 5 feet, so a meter and a half, which is a bit more reasonable. Still kind of short. Still, why is it cabled in the first place? But, it's an improvement. Still won't get one. I will just, play Chrono Trigger. I've got it on my DS. I'll play it there.
Wait, do you have that? Or do I have your DS version sitting in my entertainment unit in my lounge room right now? I can't remember if
Took it back from you. Did you get it back at your house? Yeah. So now I can play it. In other Nintendo news, I saw an article this week talking about the quickest way to unlock all the stuff in ARMS, which we've talked about previously. The fact that you have to unlock each arm for each character individually and kind of at random. Also, did get it confirmed that every single arm then has a second unlock to get a more powerful version of it.
And you wouldn't tell me how many unlocks there were before, so yeah, please. Cliff,
would you like to know how many unlocks there are?
Please tell me.
In total, between all the characters and the second level upgrades you can then get for each one, there are 570 unlockable arms. This is before they drop their DLC characters down the line who will assumably add extra content.
That, unless you're getting an unlock every minute you play, that is too many unlocks.
You are not. And even if you are sort of speeding up the unlock speed, that's still like dozens of hours to get everything.
Can you just pay $15 and get them all?
Yeah.
I mean,
I would love to just drop some money and say, you know what? Yes, I will pay to win essentially to get these unlocks because it's a good game, but I'm not going to be playing it for dozens of hours to get all the unlocks.
It's a bad dev choice on the game. It's a really bad dev choice to make it that hard to unlock everything. Unlocks, especially low level unlocks, should be getting so many unlocks to start with that you can't even count them.
Making it rain.
It seems like that's not the case. It seems like you have to wait for a while to even get one randomly that you may or may not use because you don't give a shit about that character.
Apparently there's a higher coin drop in the online modes, as we kind of suspected.
So there actually is still that, then?
There is. You get sort of, when you're doing the sort of unmatched online play, you get 3 or 4 coins per win, plus one or two coins per loss. If you win too many times in a row, they start to handicap you, so you'll have your health reduced, but that means that if you win, you get more coins. So sort of incrementally, you lose 25% health, you get an extra coin, 50%, another, 75%, go. Yeah, so I should get into ARMS and try the online modes to see how quick a rate of unlock that is in the end, but they've already announced that there'll be a DLC character coming, the end boss, Max Brass. You'll be able to unlock him soon, I think, as a DLC character, but that probably means that he'll add an extra 3 ARMS for every character to then unlock, which will be a further increase on the unlock load.
Hooray, and I'm sure those ARMS will be, like, amazing in multiplayer as well online. So they'll be dominant because he's the end boss, so it'll be super powerful. And so in order to do it all, you'll need to, play nonstop forever to do it.
We are running long, so the last little bit of stuff I wanted to talk about was a couple of trailers that dropped. So do you want to just do a yes-no reaction type thing?
Sure.
So first one, I reckon I can probably guess your reaction. The trailer for Rick and Morty Season 3 dropped.
Oh, man. Oh, if I could post the in this podcast audibly... the Krieger stop my penis going to get so erect thing, then that would be it. That's my reaction.
Haha, I'm Pickle Rick.
Fighting.
Everyone loves Pickle Rick as well.
Yeah, fighting rats. I can't wait for that shit. At the end of July, July 30th or something?
July 29th or 30th. Dropping 10 episodes for this season. Yay. The trailer for Marvel's Inhumans dropped.
I mean, yeah, it was a trailer, right, for a show that's coming out. Whether it will be any good, I don't know.
Maximus the Mad's accent, played by, is it Ewan Rhett?
So I think the problem a lot of people had here is that the shit that he had in that trailer was not up to the same quality as him from Game of Thrones or Misfits. Then I have a massive problem with inspirational speeches in general. Unless you're William Wallace in Braveheart giving an inspirational speech, everything else just seems a shit imitation of it. But...
And for something that they were sort of talking about being filmed in IMAX as well, it didn't look that good.
It didn't, yeah. Like some of the individual shots of when they're showing what's clearly a massive panorama of Hawaii in all its beauty, that's cool, I suppose. But it didn't make it seem any more grand than anything. I think we're just going to have to see the first couple episodes to find out what the show's actually like. Because, that trailer was not great. We're in an age where we get great trailers for shit movies and really poor trailers for what turned out to be really good movies as well. So I think they should just work out who they're using for their trailer people and clamp down on that.
Yeah. Ewan Rhian's vaguely American-British accent was terrible, but was not beaten by how terrible Medusa's hair still looks. Good God, that's an awful wig.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really seen it in full action yet. So, but it does, I mean, it just
looks... At the very least, it shouldn't be a dead straight garbage wig from a Halloween store.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful. Drops in end of September for, the two IMAX episodes, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll have to see on that.
The one I really can't decide how I feel about is the Jumanji trailer.
I haven't actually watched this yet.
Okay, do you know the general conceit of this movie, though?
It's supposed to be an actual sequel, isn't it?
There's nothing in the trailer that hints at that directly. But basically, it's based on a Jumanji video game.
Oh, yes, I heard this, yeah.
Yeah, at the start of the movie, the four teens with attitude get sucked into the game and sort of embody these characters. Yeah, so it's like The Rock, Jack Black, Kevin Hart,
and
Karen Gillan. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of their excuse, which means that the cheerleadery girl is inhabiting Jack Black's body, so he gets to act like a teen girl the whole movie.
So, I mean, that is actually, that's funny.
That could be funny.
What would actually be better
could also
is
be terrible.
The teen girl being The Rock would actually be funnier.
Yeah. I mean, he's being played by the nerd, so yeah.
Oh, okay, I can see why they did that, but I guess we'll see a lot of very family-friendly fish out of water stuff. Not interesting fish out of water stuff, but family-friendly fish out of water stuff. So it'll be cheesy as hell.
But, it really doesn't matter what they do. It can't be better than the original Jumanji.
The original Jumanji, if you go back and look at it, it's not that great, to be honest.
It's a friggin' masterpiece, and I won't hear a bad word spoken against it.
It is good, but it is not a masterpiece.
A game for those who seek to find a way to leave their world behind.
Just quoting the movie doesn't make it more of a masterpiece.
It does. I was terrified of those giant mosquitoes as a kid as well.
It just means that you watched that movie a shit ton as a kid.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I lived in the Northern Territory at the time. I had nothing else to do. But yeah, those giant mosquitoes, I would have nightmares about them every time I'd watch them.
What about the spiders? Like, when they're on the... He's stuck in the floor. And Robin Williams is stuck in the floor and the spiders... Fuck that shit.
No, it was just the mosquitoes with their giant, like, stabby noses. And I was just like, there's no way you could escape. They'd get to you. Ugh. So yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. I want to like it, but I might hate it. So... We'll find out in December.
I do love The Rock, though. The Rock in comedy roles is actually a genius bit of casting. He's actually a very, very funny man.
He can be, yeah.
If you've ever seen Southland Tales, watch Southland Tales. Like, when you watch The Rock in it, he's great in that movie. That movie is all kinds of weird, as you would expect from the maker of Donnie Darko. But The Rock in that movie is great. It's like a very fidgety, nervous actor guy. He's legitimately funny in that movie.
But I think for this week, that'll probably just about do us. We talked a lot this week. I guess that offsets the shorter episode we had last week.
I actually played some games this week, so...
Yeah, really threw off our rhythm, Cliff.
I know, right?
That's just not how we do. But thank you for listening anyway to The Indoorsman. As usual, we are your podcast guide to the great indoors, including games that Cliff's playing this week. So enjoy that special edition.
In like high definition as well on my brand new microphone.
Yes, and please do enjoy like crisp, clear Clifford.
But anyway, back on track. Our intro and outro music is the track Fuck Sidechain Compression on Game Boy by Rocco W. Bandcamp, YouTube, Google, it's all there. Buy stuff. It's really, really awesome.
Yes, very good. Bloops. You can find us online at The Indoorsman on Facebook or indoorsmanpodcast.com. Also Twitter at @_indoorsman and Instagram as indoorsmanpodcast to check out the weekly cover art, which is very good.
If Matt doesn't say so himself.
I definitely say so myself.
Mm. If you want to get in touch with myself or Matt on Twitter, you can contact me at Cliff and Monkey and Matt at Ponk. And you can actually, if you have any comments or questions or anything like that about the show in general, anything you want to get to both of us at the same time, you can email us at contact@indoorsmanpodcast.com.
Yeah, especially get in touch if you are enjoying the difference in audio quality, the 50% increase in quality that our podcast has undergone this week.
It's got to be more than that. The amount that I was bringing it down before surely has to be more than 50%.
Well, I figure I was fulfilling my end of the bargain and you were at zero, so we were only at 50%.
Yeah, but I mean, it's such a subjectively bad amount that it skews it further.
Oh, you were saying you were like biting my style just by how bad your audio was.
Yeah, I was eating into your 50%. Yeah.
Disgraceful.
Yeah.
But yeah, let us know how much you enjoy it, either through the email or by subscribing and reviewing the show on iTunes. Which not only helps us find out what you think, but also helps other people learn how good our show is, or bad. But please don't say bad things. We like it when people say nice things about us.
Yay. But for now...
Self-esteem.
Yeah. For now, that guy in my computer monitor is Matt.
And that sweet, smooth-sounding audio boy you hear on the other side is Cliff.
Yeah.
Let's not get into the ASMR again. We know how that went last time.
I was trying to really badly do like a Barry White kind of thing. Turn the bass right up.
That's just that's just the Kool-Aid, man. but by indoorsman tradition, we'll send you off by saying something from Smooth Boy Cliff.
Thank you. I've been Cliff. That is all.
Rule of threes. Who's waiting for the last thing? All right, we're done. Bye.